I'm not going to impute to the other side that they're, you know, some sort of evil, unchristian Marxists who just want to destroy a church from the inside, you know, and sort of in but I mean, you might.
I mean, I don't know.
For the sake of argument, for the sake of argument.
Okay.
All right. So we're recording now. Welcome to the Stand Firm Podcast. So. I'm the Reverend J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish, and here with our erstwhile longtime not seen visitor, Matt Kennedy of the Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York. Nick Lannon is currently in Rwanda, I believe, visiting mission Rwanda. Partners of his diocese and church. So it's just us, Matt. So we're going to try to keep it as linear as possible. So good luck. But it is good to see you. You're currently in Virginia, you were telling me.
Yeah, undisclosed location. Like, I don't want to say where we are because
that's right. You'll get doxed. Just
keep on the down low, yeah. So we can get work done.
You and Amy Coney Barrett are going to start complaining about security issues. Yeah, but tell us about your vacation. Where'd you go?
Well, those first 2 weeks we're preparing for my oldest daughter's wedding. Emma was married.
Right.
And so that was really
congratulations.
A lot of work. Yeah, it was great. It was really good. I prepared the most of the food for that myself for 200 people, which was a lot of work, and my wife.
And what was the menu?
Not just me. Well, I did all the meat. I did all the meat.
Pulled pork. Have Anne on too. Pull her over. Yeah.
I did. Pulled pork was the main thing. So I smoked it and pulled it.
Do you have a special rub? Do you have a special Matt Kennedy signature? You do?
I do.
What's your secret ingredient? Or you can't tell, right?
I can't tell you.
Cheer wine. Cheer wine. That's right. Tobacco, cigar ash, or something like that. That's good. And then what? And then this is the last week, or no? This is a working week. What did you do the last
week? Well, we got back from vacation last week, but I'm going to be one of the people leading our diocesan preaching conference. I didn't know that until 2 weeks ago when the guy who was supposed to do it was canceled. So I suddenly said, okay, well, I've got to have a week or so to.
Wait, he was canceled or he canceled? You said was canceled? He was canceled or he canceled himself?
He couldn't make it. The person originally able to come in from
England. Just to clarify.
Couldn't do it. So I'm the second string guy going on.
Well, you're the canon.
But they had someone coming in from England. So it was like,
which of course means he must be better and more sophisticated. Exactly. That's right.
Because he is
coming from our 51st state, GDP wise.
Yeah,
I love that stat so much. Yeah, we're down in Florida with my parents at a, what's this place called? Blue Mountain Beach. It's like they took 30A, you know, they started with Seaside and then they've just developed the entire was a country road and now it's just resort after resort. But it's been great. And then we were up with Laz's parents. So we did make it with we had all 10 of us, because we have a babysitter with us, on an airplane from Charlotte to Destin, which was something. Baby in arms and everything. It was intense.
You've done that.
But we did it. We did. I was pretty sure. I didn't know my kids were ever going to see the South again. The only rule is that they have to say y'all. That's the only one. We're fighting some of the other Midwestern accents, but y'all is a non-negotiable. But yeah, it was good to see you. You have been offline. You said I tried to be, but I am not. But we didn't even talk about what we were going to talk about before then. So there's a lot going on. But I think one of the things we can do is a grab bag. It's sort of a state, as far as we can tell, of the ACNA, or at least kind of a, you know, looking ahead towards the fall and looking back past this rather tumultuous and quite, in many ways, unbelievable year that we have walked through with our fair church. I don't know. Where do you want to begin? I mean, we have another C4SO sort of church that's, you know, doing what they do and kind of pushing the boundaries. We've got the Wood trial. We've got the proliferation of something that was brought to my attention by our one of our listener of all of these various networks, these ever growing networks of different people that are sort of the unelected bureaucracy of the ACNA. That's all just very concerning. I mean, I have to admit, I'm as you know, there's no going back. Like the conquistadors and the boats, you know, there's no, they've all been burned. But to
I mean,
say that, to say that there's
if you
not
look
some
at all the
things that are concerning.
initiatives, if you look at the initiatives and who is in charge of them and the kind of material they put out, they're almost exclusively woke. I mean, I don't know of one initiative that is not eaten up with leftist ideology. And I think either which maybe it was the email that you sent me from one of our listeners, but I don't know who said it, but it was correct that it does seem like, in large part, the province has kind of offloaded the teaching task or the application of biblical teaching task to these initiatives. Like, so you have an initiative for women in the church, women's leadership initiative, women's or the young new next generation initiative. The now there's apparently there's a climate care initiative or something along. I'm not even sure if that's
Creation care. Creation care. I'm
creation
looking at it.
care. I'm not sure if that's provincial or not, but I mean it does seem like these initiatives are doing the weight, doing the work and carrying the weight of applying Christian thought to these various avenues, when that's really it should be the bishop's role, right? I don't know why we have to hire leftists to come in and apply leftist ideology with a veneer of the gospel over them to tell us how what how women and men relate in the church or what to do about creation, climate. I don't understand why we have these, and they have become hotbeds of disruption and attempted revolution in the church.
Yeah, it's been disappointing, you know, for all sorts of reasons. But to your point about the, you know, ever since the sort of gay Christian statement, you know, which again we've referenced many times, that was what, almost 6 years ago now, or 5 years ago, you know, I feel like very little has come out from the College of Bishops that is as substantial and sort of forthright as that statement has been on all sorts of things, you know. And it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm thinking back like my experience with bishops in general, but I guess what it's been 20 years now, but I can't really remember any bishops, whether it's Church of England or the Episcopal Church, that was sort of operating as sort of a theological ballast, you know. And again, I don't, it's nothing personally against any of the people in the college, but I agree with you. You know, there's an unelected bureaucracy, you know, that seems to be driving at least some of the theological trains around here, and it's very concerning. You know, I mean,
I
it's
mean,
definitely.
I think within individual dioceses, bishops are teaching. I mean, my bishop definitely
Well,
is
sure.
a teacher, and but I mean, I think one of the reasons why we don't have the College of Bishops exercising theological authority in the province is because they're so divided, right? So how
Yeah.
can they actually speak with one voice about the relationship between men and women in the church?
Yeah, they
No.
can.
They
No.
can't. I mean, can they speak about what the Christian's responsibility is with regard to the earth
Creation.
creation? No, they can't. Can they speak with one voice about even sexuality? No. The last they used it, you're right. The last thing they did was with the gay Anglican letter, but I'm not sure they could all sign that now, given what we
Well, yeah,
see
and
from the
even that was
RCFSO.
immediately walked back by some. I mean, that
Yeah,
was,
that's
you
right.
know,
C4SO walked it back. You're right. So I mean, I think. So what do you do when you don't have a church that can speak with one voice about the issues of the day? I mean, I would say the best bet would just be silent, but
right.
instead they just don't. If you can't say anything productive, don't say anything at all. But the last thing you should do is let is offload that work to these initiatives, which I think maybe this is also part of the letter that you sent me, the forwarded email you sent me, which don't seem to have any Episcopal oversight. There doesn't seem to be any, like, will you send before you release this devotional, this 25 day devotional on climate care, creation care, will you please submit it to the College of Bishops, so we can examine it, or will you at least submit it to your bishop, so he can examine it? That doesn't seem to be going on at all. These are just kind of
Well, and then it,
freewheeling.
yeah, and then it, and I mean, they're all being funded by someone or someones. Again, I'm not implying any nefarious, sort of dark money here or whatever, but to that point, somebody's got an idea, somebody's got an agenda, and I mean, I have an agenda, I have ideas, but that they're being sort of operated without any, like you said, oversight or unanimity amongst the college, produces what we see on the ground, which is, I hear all the time, like, if I leave Holy Trinity, what ACNA am I going to enter into? If I get a job, and that's been the case, both receiving people, people, like when I was at St. Luke's, people would come from some other ACNA church, and be like, what is this? Like, who are you? What have you been teaching? And then, now I've been at Hillsdale for a year, and there's a genuine fear, or at least concern, among the students who have become, enamored with and convicted by the prayer book and the Anglican way of worship, that, when they leave, depending on where they go, they might have to join an LCMS church or a PCA church or something. And I have that conversation frequently, much more than I expected to. But of course, I'm very sympathetic to it, because, to your point, the church, the province, is unified in name only at this point. And the everything from churchmanship to I mean, something as seemingly superficial, or literally superficial, as dress, but all the way down to adherence to the formularies, teaching of the 39 articles, usage of the homilies. I mean, it's the Wild West in a certain sense. And I have to admit, and again, I hope to qualify all this with, like I said from the beginning, like, there's I mean, I will go down with the ship. Like, I'm not a naysayer, nor am I the son of one, but I am increasingly discouraged, I think, by the lack of interest, if not concern, about the continued fracturing that we see. And it's, every Episcopal election is starting to, as we just saw in wherever that was, Gulf Coast. Is that Gulf Coast? No, it was, every Episcopal election, it's like our Supreme Court elections. It's like everything slows to a halt every time, anything consequential happens, because the only thing that really matters is whatever the balance of power is in the college with respect to, it's, I say, women's ordination, but that's just a presenting issue of a host of other things that you've pointed out. It's like when I used to, we did depot back when I was in the Episcopal Church, and I had to spend a year, quote, informing the parish about what that meant, right? And so it was basically a succession of kind of public forums and private, sort of lambastings at my expense, about how, I was a homophobe, and I was a fundamentalist and a closet Baptist and all these things. But I kept saying, I was like, listen, I mean, gay marriage, marriage itself, is a public institution, and it's a political one, for that matter. I mean, it creates the bedrock of society. So, I said, this is why it's an important issue. But of course, it's just the presenting issue, because underneath it are all a manner of other things. And I think that's what we're actually seeing now. I mean, again, we mentioned in the beginning it's reportedly a C4 or so church, but there was this, screenshot on Twitter going around, and it was talking about side B Christians and side A and all this stuff. And again, whether it is or isn't, it definitely was in the, at least ostensibly, in the ACNA, according to the poster. And I was reading that, and I just said, I mean, I respect, to a certain degree, people of conviction, even if I disagree with them. But it is increasingly impossible to think that these varied convictions are going to be able to be held. And then, of course, we're looking at a At some point, I mean, hopefully we'll still be alive for it. There's going to be a transfer of, just an age transfer of responsibility and authority within, institutions across the board, but ours is no different. And, given my experience with the, we should say, the spectrum of young men coming up in the ranks, it's not going to get much better. There's a, I mean, there's some people, and again, I respect them, I disagree with them, but of deep conviction and energy and enthusiasm to bring the church in a direction that I personally am not for. But they're in us, they're with us. And so how is this going to be resolved, and what is going to be the answer? I do not know. I mean, I have thoughts, but yeah, it's increasingly unsustainable. And I don't think anyone who's paying attention could argue otherwise in any good faith. But again, I think that we are, we're searching for an answer, and it has yet to come.
Well, I mean, I think, I think Mark Marshall suggested, and I think it's not a bad suggestion, the solution of two jurisdictions within one province, and one pro women's ordination, one that doesn't ordain women. And I think good fences make good neighbors, and I think that would be probably the only way out of this conflict at this point. I don't think it's going to get resolved, because, and we've had this conversation millions of times, but because the conflict isn't a biblical one. We're not fighting over what the Bible says. We're fighting over liberation,
That's right.
Marxist ideology being inserted into the church under the guise of the gospel, and so there's no common ground upon which to argue. Like you can argue with someone on any question as long as you both submit to the authority of the scriptures as the guide star for the faith. But if you have someone who's using the scriptures as kind of just a vehicle underneath which to insert all kinds of
That's right.
ideological positions, you can't have, there's no argument to be had. So I think that it's ultimately we're headed toward a place where we have to just say, okay, you know what, we're two very distinct jurisdictions. We might want to still call ourselves the ACNA, but we can't have intercommunion. I mean, there's not communion between the two sides already. The church, and I think also, like, the side that is pro women's ordination, you're right, that issue is at the forefront, but it goes along with a truckload of issues that just stem out of a philosophical, theological position that is so far from orthodoxy that we just have nothing in common. And that church in Texas that has that welcomes Side A people. Side A, if you don't know, is within the realm of homosexual affirmation. Side A are people who believe that homosexual relationships are fine, including sex. Side B are those who identify as somewhere on the queer theory spectrum, but who remain celibate because of their convictions about the scriptures. Side B has serious theological problems, but at least it's better than Side A, right?
That's right.
So Side A is we don't have any theological reservations about having sex with people of the same sex, in whether you're, I mean, in all forms of different relationships and combinations. And this church, it's called Christ. Let me get the name of it here. I had it up.
Oh,
It is the Christ.
I thought it was shrouded in mystery. I was wrong.
No. The church is now known. It is Church of the Cross in Austin, Texas, and the policy is that so long as a Side A person in a relationship will acknowledge that the teaching of the ACNA is that is sin, that person is welcome to come forward for full membership in the congregation and to come forward for the Eucharist and receive communion. So now that makes a nod toward, but doesn't quite get there. So it's making a nod toward penitence, right?
Right.
So if you have someone in your congregation who is actively sinning in some way, but who also acknowledges that to be a sin and is confessing that regularly and seeking God's help to eradicate that from his or her life, yes, come to the table.
Yes.
But it's not just saying, oh yeah, I acknowledge that the ACNA teaches
That's
this
right.
sin.
That's right.
That is not the same
That's
thing.
crazy.
Right.
That is
So, and what's
crazy.
happening though, if I won't say if, since the Bible is true, and Paul tells us that people who approach the table in defiance, unworthily, are in danger of their lives, this Church of the Cross, whoever the rector is there, is endangering lots of people. He's inviting people to die. He's inviting people to get sick.
Well,
And
and the worst part about it is, we have an excommunication, right? I think, maybe I'm getting confused with the 79. At any rate, somebody who's causing a scandal, a public scandal. And I've had to explain that to more people than I expected in my career. But the point of it, as far as I've been taught, and then I explained, is that if communing you is actually going to undermine the faith and harm the sort of confidence in the gospel and the scriptures of those around you, well, then we can't do it. So I mean, I've had this
right.
conversation. I said, you are publicly engaging in activity that is a mockery of, in this case, your wedding vows. And I know young married couples in the church who know about this, and you are actively undermining their confidence in, till death do we part. And so therefore, scandal is taking place. And so that seems to be exactly the same thing. And it's heartbreaking because, it's not like we're sitting there just wanting to become, fence the table with every, go visit homes and I mean the dreaded Calvin's Geneva, I mean, of course that's a little bit of a myth also, but goodness, we have some standards. And then of course it brings back the whole question as to like, what did we get into this in the first place? I mean, like this is really the heartbreaking thing for me. I mean, I drive past, I'm back down in the South and, I'm catching up with my parents and listening to what's going on at St. James Baton Rouge, for instance, and it's limping along, but it's still going. And I've got friends from high school that still go there, and it's not going to ever have, it's never going to fully display what, maybe like Grace Cathedral in San Francisco or something does. But fundamentally under the hood, it's still an Episcopal church. But it's in many ways, again, according to some of these initiatives, indistinguishable at its sort of grassroots level from some of the stuff that's going on in the ACNA. I mean, we've got people talking about carbon emissions and, writing, speaking very, where you had that other church somewhere where they were, masking and fighting ICE agents, as part of their gospel witness or whatever. And you're sitting there, you're like, did I wake up? Did maybe 2003 was the apocalypse, or maybe and we're all in some sort of like alternative timeline where we're actually still in the Episcopal Church. I mean, that's what it feels like some days. And
Well, I
I know
mean,
our listener doesn't care about us being grumpy old men because I have a suspicion he might be one himself. But it's impossible to, having lost an institution, having walked through the wreckage and the rubble, and having at least the heady feeling of starting afresh and clean and kind of building something. Well, that was then, and I'm not saying that we're not going to keep fighting, but man, it's a bitter pill at some days to wake up and see the news.
right. Well, the thing you sent me today about the Anglican Creation Care Network, ACCN, is that what it's called? Again, I don't know its provincial ties. I'm not sure if it's tied to the province.
I think it's under New Wineskins. I think it's like the
Okay,
Mission
but
Network,
that's
I
okay. The
think.
New Wineskins is a very centrally, very powerful group within the ACNA, right? Yeah. So I first heard that term a little bit before Megan Basham's book came out, because we're talking about Gavin Ortland using that phrase, creation care, to kind of wedge it into kind of a gospel imperative. Being an environmentalist is the imperative for the Christian.
That's right.
She had she he used that language to make it kind of a law to support the most, some of the more extreme versions of environmentalism. And she was dead on right about it. People pushed back on her, but she was dead on right about this. So creation care is a, is a, is a, I think it's a deceptive and I think it's a lie because underneath that term, you're not talking about Christians thinking responsive, just being thinking responsibly about the environment.
That's right.
If you read the, their material, it's the stuff you sent me, they've already trucked in the idea that human beings are responsible for climate change. So
Right. And you're gonna
that's a
you're gonna
very
need bugs.
ideologically, what?
Lab
Yeah, we
grown
got to eat
meat
bugs,
is
right?
the next
That's
step.
very
That's right. That's
ideologically,
right.
that is a political fight, right? So now, so now what you've done is you've taken one of the major planks of cultural Marxism and brought it into the church under under the guise of creation care. And that in itself puts a weight on the shoulder of the scrupulous Christian who wants to care for God's creation. Now, if you are not supportive of quote unquote creation care with its whole truckload of leftist Marxist
The solar
ideas, then you
panels.
are not right.
That's right.
You are not caring for create that. So it's a very deceptive, manipulative, I think sinful way to use language. And I'm ashamed that that we have that in any way associated with the ACNA. Thank goodness it's not a provincial initiative.
Well, and it's we're back in the same boat again. I mean, I know I'm a broken record here, but there you have it. It's like the remember what was the Anglican Communion came out with its like well one that was the year of decade of evangelism, which was so funny. No, that was the Episcopal Church with Michael what's his
We had
name?
the
No, remember
five
it was
years,
the
1,000
what was
churches
the
or
there was like
something.
the three initiatives or whatever. Remember they were like there were it doesn't matter.
In the
But the
Episcopal
point
Church or
is,
in the ACNA?
yeah, I think it was the Episcopal Church. It was like the
Oh.
there was the oh they
There
used
was
them
a
all the
decade of
time
evangelism. I
like
remember the decade of
every
evangelism.
but. At any rate, the point is, the joke was always, the church can't speak clearly about what the Bible says, in all manner of things, and yet, it can weigh in with great fervor and specificity about, complex environmental and justice issues, quote unquote, ad
Reduce your
nauseam.
corporate print,
And the
right?
sad part about it, I was just listening
Or
to
Jesus.
Anglican Inc. I was just listening to Kevin and George on Anglican Inc. Before this, because I wanted to make sure I was up to date with whatever they were talking about. But I think the title of the episode was "Nobody Cares," and one of the things was that they just noted that that the Nairobi Accord, or whatever the ACC just came up with something, and they were going to restructure the commune or whatever. And they solicited response from the 41 provinces in the Anglican Communion, and something like three of them responded. That's it. And the point was, and I was kind of it was discouraging, was that the longer this persists, the less people care about any of this. And I see this firsthand. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Binghamton, but having been a year at Hillsdale and watching these young men and women come through, and it's been wonderful. It's been quite a shift in pastoral ministry, but very intense, very committed. The Hillsdale type student is you can imagine. And the unseriousness of our position on women's ordination, the unseriousness of some of these conversations is just is evident and palatable to the extent that we're just watching people sort of cruise through and then end up again like in the Missouri Synod or Roman Catholicism or Eastern Orthodox,
Yeah.
something that seems more robust and more meaningful. And I do my best. I mean, I've had to bone back up on all my John Jewell and Richard Hooker, and I'm getting I've got my argument, and I'm a convicted Protestant and an Anglican, and I still stand behind Dom Dix's statements, to the pejorative that at least the 52 Book of Common Prayer was the most thoroughgoingly attempt to put the doctrine of justification by faith into liturgical form. Like I stand behind that, and that was a very compelling argument early on in my conversion to Anglicanism. That being said, I'm also, an old man and not, or an older man, and I'm not 22 starting out, with looking at the next, 5 decades of my life in a church. And from the outside, All of these things about which we've been speaking have are very disillusioning and un again, I keep using the word unserious, but that's just the one that keeps coming to mind. And we're fighting that, you know. And so I can say, you know, it's like in our diocese. I can say, well, our diocese, you know, if you're attracted to coming into Living Word, you know, you're inspired by Bishop Dobbs, and you know, find comfort amongst the collegiality that we have. It's like, well, you know, I pitch that to people. But then they say, well, you know, what if I end up in a different diocese? Or what if I, you know, I'm like, well, you could plan a Living Word church wherever you end up. You know, I can connect you with some people. But you know, we're so yeah, so we're, you know, one of the responses to this, and I'm hoping it takes more flesh soon, literally, is we're starting something along the lines, I think y'all have a sort of a fellows program. You know, we're looking at intentionally identifying young men at Hillsdale who are coming up through and asking them to seriously consider at least a period of discernment for the ordained ministry. And we're working currently with Westminster Seminary through and the Davenant Institute is helping sort of it's a mix, you know, we're putting this together. But the goal is to have some sort of pipeline that says, well, you know, one answer to whatever the challenges we face is to raise up more strong, convicted, you know, biblically articulate and courageous young men to send them out into the ACNA. And so that's been encouraging for me. It's one of the first things. And that's what y'all been doing for a while. I mean, how many people have you raised up and sent from Good Shepherd?
We've had like eight go through the process, but we've only sent four forward for ordination. We have two in the pipeline right now.
Yeah, that's cool.
And one, yeah. So anyway, but that's what you have to do. We're a small church, right? And that's pretty good for a small
Yeah.
church.
Yeah, for sure.
We have to play the long game, I think, and that is part of the long
That's
game,
right.
is if
That's right.
we're gonna restore this denomination, we have to just get the foundations set by
That's
raising
right.
young men and doing the sort of things you're doing. You know, I going back to what you're saying about people coming through and saying, am I gonna, if I move to Ohio, am I gonna find a church like this? And we basically have to say, no, I don't know. I think it's important for people who we sense might be susceptible to go to Orthodoxy or the Roman Catholic Church to make a real strong distinction between the ACNA on the one hand and Anglicanism on the other.
That's right.
Because Anglicanism is not the ACNA. I think we pretty much say that. There is Anglicanism in the ACNA,
Right.
but the ACNA I would not describe as thoroughly an Anglican body. It's a mixed body of lots of different things thrown in together under the banner of Anglicanism. But Anglicanism in itself it's very clear. I mean, if you're looking for a clear understanding of anthropology and the ontology of men and women,
That's right.
you go to the 1662 prayer book and look at the order
The
for
marriage.
matrimony. I mean,
I
it's
love
just,
it.
yeah, my daughter used it. They used
I
the
love it.
1662 orders.
You know, I just reread that the other day too, because you know, the great you know, triggering phrase about submit you know, to love and obey. You know, they never mentioned the man's vows. You know, you must have heard them, you know, said, with
With
my
my body, I
body,
thee
I thee
worship, and all
worship,
my
and
worldly
with
goods, I
all
do
my worldly
bestow.
goods, I do, I thee endow. It's like,
Okay.
well, you know what? I might take that. I might take that, that agreement. You know, that's the whole point. And that's the whole problem, Matt, is that the greatest problem that the world is facing, at least in the West currently, this ontological question, you know, men and women, you know, being. And we have all of the resources, and we have all of the, you know, some of the beautiful poetry. We have the hymnody, we have the sermons for that matter. And all of it is being straitjacketed or sort of locked at the or throttled at the moment because we can't speak with one voice about it. You know, I mean, this is the again, I know we sound like broken records, but I mean, not a week goes by that I'm not reminded about how what I would love is to actually have a sense of collegiality where we're actually presenting the challenges of the day to a unified group and saying, help, you know, help us. Like, I'm not exactly sure some of these questions, you know, what, you know, some of the, like we had Emma Waters on a couple of weeks ago, you know, the modern challenge of two income families and the cost of living and, husbands and wives and mothering and fathering. Like these are complex issues. And Liza and I, by God's grace, this year have made it 23 years, but I've spoken much about this. For the first 10 years or so, we weren't availing ourselves of any of this rich history. We were sort of too sophisticated for that, and that is something that I regret, but I'm grateful for it because it's one of these lessons, like Paul talks about in Philippians 4, I can get to all things, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, but there's also the learning part of it. And I'm sitting here with these wounds and these scars and grateful that they were in his severe mercy, blunted, but finding it increasingly impossible not to simply say, well, look, don't do what I did. Go read these books, pick up the John Piper, Wayne Grudem book on biblical masculinity and femininity. Sure, there's some couple of paragraphs in there that are a little bit, probably the new edition might not contain, but like in general, that's where we're going. Like that's what we need. And I'm meeting with these, young dating people, preparing people for marriage, and have, again, by God's grace, the learned, well, I'd like to say wisdom, the hard learned wisdom of saying, look, you ignore these questions and you discount their importance at your own peril. So you think you're just going to figure it out, and just sort of be drift along with the culture. You're in trouble. You're gonna find much more heartache than you otherwise would. And all of that is being thwarted by this kind of the eggshells that we all have to walk on. I mean, I'm grateful, I'm in Living Word now, and obviously there's some shared conviction, and it's been great. But I've also served in different places where, we're Christian men. I mean, we're not trying to be provocateurs or cruel or harsh. And so you do have to sort of speak with some, a bit more measured and frankly less honest than you otherwise would to kind of keep the, people at the table, and you don't want to be accused of this, that, or other. And it's exhausting. And I'm sure it's exhausting for people on the other side too, I mean, and that's the problem. It's like, it's like back when we were in the Episcopal Church, when I mention it all the time just because it was so sad, when the Bishop of Texas came out with his, middle way, where he was saying that, he's personally against it, but we're gonna, I mean, it was just the saddest thing. But that's basically what in a certain sense, from at a provincial level, we're all being asked to do. Like we're all being asked to sort of, actually not speak honestly about what we believe is genuinely true. And again, I'm imputing conviction and honesty to the other side and saying I don't, I'm not saying that I mean, I think they're wrong, but I think that they would say the same thing to me. And that's where we get back to this unsustainable tension, because I'm not going to impute to the other side that they're, some sort of evil unchristian Marxists who just want to destroy a church from the inside, and sort of and
I
but
think
I
some
mean
of
you
them
might
are.
you might you might
I mean, I don't know.
I'm
I mean, I
just
mean,
for the
this.
sake of argument for the sake of argument let's assume that there's just people like who genuinely believe N.T. Wright, Ben Witherington,
Hey, who genuinely believe in Marxism and think it's Christianity. Okay, I can buy that. I wouldn't want to attribute to them insincerity
I'm trying
or
to be as
dishonesty, right?
ironic. I'm trying to be as gentle. But anyway, my point stands. I mean, this is a situation, and again, it's heartbreaking for me. And I'm so again so grateful to be in this diocese because I can call you, and I can call we have another other colleagues that I'm text with all the time about all sorts of questions. What do we do about, vestry setup? What do we do about, pastoral care with this issue and that issue? And it's bittersweet, really, because I didn't know what you didn't have in a certain sense. And would that it would be provincial wide, would be quite something. I mean, I think like back to our point, one of the things we're just going to flood the zone, as best we can. One of my other sort of initiatives is, to take people from, and I think you do this too, who went to like Anglican studies programs or even a place like Trinity or Neshota even, who might be, still still in formation mode, even out of seminary, and hopefully raise some money to do a 2 or 3 year curacy, right out of seminary with us. We can't afford it, but we're looking for help because that would be another way of kind of ensuring. I mean, not that they would just listen to me, but obviously in the
But
context of a
you pass
parish
on the
with,
DNA of Orthodox
that's
Anglicans,
right.
yeah. Yeah.
That's right. And so, we would help that also, so sort of intake and outtake. And that's kind of been a new kind of really exciting vision for, we have a relatively small church too. I mean, we have a bunch of students, it's single income professors, staff, and students. So, our budget isn't very big, but our hearts are, Matt, we're right there. And but that's exciting to me though, because I say, well, my grandchildren, which I hope to see, someday will, at the very least, know what Anglicanism, to your point, is, and trust the insights that were hard fought and won at the time of the Reformation and codified and put into, the Bible, put to prayer through the prayer book. And again, to your point, our 39 articles are incredibly prescient with respect to, concupiscence, the nature of inborn sin, with the reality of justification, predestination. I mean, down the line, all of the sort of generational conflicts that arise when, 22-year-olds actually start reading theology and they say, wait, this is, it's like, well, hold on. Like we've had this conversation before. And it has worked, and it's been edifying and life-giving for centuries.
Right.
And where it's been put and tried, there's nothing better. I mean, there's just nothing better. And so, I think as discouraging as some of the news from this past year has been, I think I'm grateful that to have been at least in Hillsdale, with Bishop Dobbs, with the 28 prayer book even has been kind of refreshing. I mean, it's nothing against the 19, but east facing. I mean, it's been a change for me, but it's in the Lord's providence, it has come at the right time, because I think that the future, as uncertain as it is something we're going to walk through. But to be in a place and a diocese that is forward thinking along these lines, and then just praying, trusting the resources will come because the human resources are there, has been incredibly encouraging despite some of the headwinds we are currently experiencing. So, yeah, that's kind of my take. I think we've got this trial that's going on, and it's a mess, and we've got the ongoing theological divides which continue to seem to be growing. But I'm grateful. I know you are, like on the ground. There's life, and there's vitality, and there's hope that people are hearing the gospel and walking
If
out in peace and
you
love and
keep
serve
your
the Lord.
focus on the local, on your local situation, it's a lot brighter than
Amen.
the provincial situation. I think by now, though, Nick would be sending us this little note saying, "You've been talking for 40 minutes."
I think so.
And so.
Well, I think if anything portends the changing winds, it's the fact that your neighborhood is not festooned with pride flags like it
Yeah.
has been in the
I live a
past.
whole bunch
That's
of professors, a whole bunch of liberal people in my neighborhood, and it's like no. I mean, actually, there's been where we in our undisclosed location in Virginia, there have been more trans gay flags than in my New York State neighborhood full of college professors. So it's interesting.
Well,
It's
praise
sad.
God for that. You just got to get to the Airbnb with the guy, that the devil worshipping Airbnb guy has got to.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Didn't y'all stay in a place like that?
Yeah, we
That's
did in Albany. There was like
Well,
it
I
was a great
think.
Airbnb. All the pictures were beautiful, and the place was beautiful. But then, like right upstairs, like pentagrams, like bloody heads. It was really gross and horrible. Not actual heads, mummy
Was it
heads.
actually cosmic?
Or
It was a franchise of Cosmic Pizza. It was a franchise of, that. Anyway, that was a deep cut. Anyway,
I don't know. It was
well, I think
pretty. It
Nick,
was. It was.
I'm hearing, I'm also hearing the voice of Nick, so we should probably close this down. Well, our listener, you have, stuck with us this long, so Nick usually keeps us wrangled in a little bit better, but. But Matt, it's great to see you back. And we'll be praying for your preaching. How many people do you have signed up for that?
I think 9 total for the college, and then there's me and another, and then Bishop Dobbs and Bishop Mark and someone else. I forget who. Canon Jansma, right?
Okay, cool.
It's good.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing about that. And, God willing, we'll be back next week and the ACNA will, well, whether it's here or not, the Anglicans will still be worshiping, rightly dividing the word and sacrament and being grateful for God's mercies shown to us through our the patrimony we've received and the responsibility we have to pass it on. And so with that, I guess we'll be standing firm. Is that how we'll end it?
That's good. That's it.
Yep.